Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we are delighted to welcome our very special guest, Congresswoman Susan Davis. She is a Democrat who represents the 53rd Congressional District, which includes parts of San Diego and much of East County now. In Congress, she has championed measures to support women, military families, education, healthcare, and veterans. She is a former social worker who also served on the San Diego Unified School District Board and in the State Assembly before Congress. She once lived on a kibbutz in Israel and later in Japan, where her husband was stationed in the military. She's also a mother and grandmother. And in Congress, she serves on the Armed Services Committee and the Education and Workforce Committee. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam. It's always great to be with you.
Well, we're certainly glad you could join us. Let's start with an update on some of the latest news in Washington. Can you give us a couple of highlights or lowlights of what's been happening in Congress that our listeners should be aware of?
Well, everyone knows we just had the State of the Union address, and so that's an important time for our bicameral Congress to come together, along with the judiciary and, of course, the administration to highlight what has been occurring, of course, in the country and looking forward to the year ahead.
Absolutely. What is your response to the State of the Union? Do you have any specific comments on some of the things the president said?
Well, I think the president was asking us to enlist our better angels. He was speaking of a time and letting us know this is not all about this president or past presidents or future presidents, but it really is all about the country as a whole, and that we need to come together. We have problems to solve. And I think he was telling us that I know you can do this, and we want to work together. It hasn't always been easy. We know that. But I think he wanted that message to resonate with Americans.
Yeah, he definitely did talk about calling for an end to this sort of bitter bipartisanship, and not just the remainder of his presidency, but he said looking ahead 5 years, 10 years to whoever the next president will be.
This is Janice Russell with East County Magazine, and I also wanted to ask Congresswoman Davis, what are some of your legislative highlights from the last year in Congress?
Well, one of the things we have worked on, and I know we recently had a meeting with our constituents around the issues of debt and loan for our college students. That's something that we are concerned about. We've had some bills that would focus on making sure that when students wanted to pay down their principal, they could do that and not just have it affect their interest, because the more they can do that and paying down their principal when they put in a little bit more, that's a good thing for them, and we want them to be able to do that. We are fortunate that there's been some revision of the FAFSA forms, and that's a good thing, but we want to figure out this problem because we know that the cost of education for our young people today is just too high, and we want to be part of that solution.
Yeah, very good point. What else could be done to make college more affordable?
We've looked at a number of issues, and of course the universities and colleges have tried to also understand their cost. We know if you look at our universities today, there is competition. Young people want more in the way of facilities. They want more in the way of services. And so we know that has an effect. And some of that is a good effect because it does enable them to engage their students more. And I'm certainly one who loves it when people, and our students particularly, are involved in community service. And we need to have facilities to help them do that as well. But we also know that it's gotten out of hand, and we have to find a way to help it be easier for students to get the loans, but more than that, to be able to pay them back in a timely fashion. I also think we need to find ways that when we have students who are engaging in professions that we need in our communities, that we have ways of letting them pay that down by their service to the community. So that would be something else we're looking at.
Sure. And there have been major education reforms implemented recently by Congress and the President. What are your views on those? And do you have additional thoughts on education issues?
Well, we just had the passage of the ESEA, which is the, what people think about as the No Child Left Behind. After 14 years of not being able to quite move forward with new legislation, We finally did pass a new education bill. The difficulty with No Child Left Behind was, I think a lot of people felt it was punitive. It was a little bit of one size fits all. Now, under the new legislation, the state will remain the major, really, focus of education. It always has been. That's the way our constitutions were written. But I think people felt that the federal government, perhaps, was engaged more than it needed to be. We're going to see how this goes, because a lot of the focus will now be on the states. We will continue to have students tested. We will continue to have students evaluated, as well as the instructional leaders. But the focus for that will be really at the state level and their oversight.
Yeah, because they certainly know the students in their schools the best.
Yeah, as a former school board member, I find this issue to be so critical and so important. What we want to be sure is that every student at every school has a chance to equally have an opportunity.
Yeah,
we can't guarantee what happens, but we want to give them all an equal chance at that opportunity.
Yeah, very good. And that was certainly a rare example in this Congress of bipartisanship, where we did see something that everyone felt was important move forward.
You recently introduced a bill that would allow military women who served in World War II to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Can you provide details?
Sure. This is really about the WAFs. And the WASP is not the, you know, that bug that flies around. It's the women Air Force special pilots, that were engaged during World War II, early in the war, when we knew we needed pilots to ferry material and people, from one place to another. And the individuals, the pilots, the service members who were engaged in this needed to fight the war, and we needed additional help in securing those services. And so they called on women who had been pilots, who were experienced pilots, to play this role. For years, there was an effort to have them seen as equal to those who had served in the military.
Yeah,
and we finally were able to do that. And one of the ways that that was brought about and really a symbol was back in the early 2000s, they were able to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Arlington National Cemetery is run by the Army, and they had allowed that to happen. And that was terrific from the WASP point of view. I happened to be in the Congress and was in Washington in our Emancipation Hall when these women were honored with gold medals for their service. So what happened, though, a year ago, is that the Secretary of the Army felt that with the facility crunch, essentially, you know, the capacity limitations that they had at Arlington, that the WASP would no longer be interned there. They never had full body burial rights, but they did have the ability to have their ashes.
So your bill would restore that right?
And so what we're doing is working hard to restore that. And we think it was a mistake. And we think that with so few really women, wanting that, there is a woman, particularly who died recently, and her family, wants to be sure that that honor goes to her. And we think it should.
Her actual last wishes were she wants to be buried at Arlington, and that was her right before, and this would restore that.
So. Right. And in this particular case, it is almost, her local cemetery. We do allow burials in national cemeteries for WASP today, but they ruled it out at Arlington. And so we want to change this injustice. Yeah. We want to, you know, allow that to happen.
Okay. All
right. Very good. And what else are you working on as a member of the Armed Services Committee that our military listeners and their families should know?
We're always working on issues that help our military families, because we know it's not just the service member who actually prepares and serves and deploys, but their entire family is very involved in that. I have worked very, very hard on some of the really difficult issues that we've seen in the military over the last number of years, having to do with sexual assault and trauma. We have actually enacted upwards of probably 45 bills over the last few years, probably more than that. Some of them, you know, quite small, fixing a problem. But we've also brought forth counselors, advisors, advocates who assist victims from the time that they even are thinking about putting in a report throughout, even if there's a court martial. That's something that we continue to work hard on and ask the questions and follow those issues, because we think for our entire military, it becomes a readiness issue. It's very important that these issues are taken seriously, and that those who perpetuate and are predators within our military are no longer in the military whatsoever, yeah. And that they're treated under judicial rules.
Well, very good. I'm sure all of the women in the military appreciate the fight that you've been putting up to protect them. Speaking of military issues, we're seeing certainly a tremendous rise in violence around the world, but particularly in the Middle East. And we're also seeing a rather alarming rise in anti-Semitism around the world. I mean, situations where it's so bad that Jewish children in France can't even go to school anymore. A lot of Jewish people are fleeing Europe. In Israel, we're seeing these knife attacks, a pregnant mother stabbed to death in front of her children the other day. I don't know how much of this is getting out in the media. It seems like maybe not enough. But I'm wondering how concerned you are about this increasing violence in the Middle East and in Israel in particular, as well as the anti-Semitism and the rhetoric of hate that seems to be on the rise against not only Jewish people, but other religious minorities, Muslims included.
I appreciate your bringing this up, because it's true that whenever we see the kind of instability that we're experiencing right now, that we also see a lot of fear, and sometimes that does come out in hating people that somehow, you know, feel like that are not your people. And I think we see that, and it's extremely disturbing. I think what's very important is that we push back against it, that local officials, as well as state and national officials, not just here, of course, mm-hmm. in the United States, but we're talking across the world and around the world where that happens, because where that begins to have an effect on communities, the outcomes, consequences have never been good. Marginalizing any group of people is not proper. And we have to fight back. And I think that's what we're trying to do. I think partly, the United States, one of the things that the president spoke about in the State of the Union is the importance of partnerships. We need to develop those partnerships. And when we exclude people or we rail against people as a country, that doesn't help us in our relationships and calling upon people around the world.
Yeah, thank you very much. Can you comment on the recent efforts by the Republicans to repeal Obamacare? They've been trying to for a long time, but last month they actually got a bill passed by the Senate, which the president vetoed.
Well, I think that was about the 62nd attempt, if I'm not mistaken, to appeal Obamacare. And I think the difficulty what we have with this is that people, actually, millions of people, are insured today that were not before. Even for people who had insurance but could not access their insurance because they had a pre-existing condition, know that they have a sense of comfort about Obamacare today, and that they can, and that they can access that insurance. Have we dealt with every problem that's come up? Of course not. And anyone who's dealt with the healthcare system often knows this. But one of the problems that they wanted to address in Obamacare was changing the cost curve, you know, was having it move down rather than up.
Right.
And what we have seen is that there is a difference, and costs have gone down, not just in medical care, but also in Medicare itself. For seniors, because we're focusing more on wellness. You know, here we are in an office building that focuses on wellness as well. Mm-hmm. And it's so important that that be the focus. And we know we can save money when we do that. But partly it's the way we organize care. The Obamacare has pushed this It hasn't gotten as far as I think we would have liked it to, perhaps, but we know that it is making a difference in that way. And all I ask is the same question that I think has been asked by not just the president, by others, is what is the alternative? Because those things that people like about Obamacare are actually important to have. And if you start taking those things away, because I've heard my colleagues say, well, we're going to keep this and we're going to keep that. But in the end, we have to have something that works for everyone, that may not be perfect for everyone, that addresses the concerns that people have. And so far, it appears that it's doing that.
Very good. A couple of quick questions on some important issues that have been in the news just in recent weeks here. One of them is the Clean Water Act. There was a bill that the Republicans pushed through that would have rolled back protections under the Clean Water Act and returned responsibility for many waterways that provide drinking water for the public to the states. That didn't work so well, as we saw in Flint, Michigan, where a tragic case there of an entire city that's basically been poisoned with lead poisoning because a governor, to save a few dollars, changed the water source to a polluted river and didn't put the required anti-corrosion chemical in that would have cost just $100 a day. And now you have all the children with lead poisoning who will be impacted for life. Now, you voted against this bill that the president ultimately vetoed that would have rolled back, you know, the Clean Water Act protections, but I would love to hear your comments about this.
Yeah, we have to be smart in the way that we roll back many of our regulations. I think that there are regulations that are duplicative and that we need to look at. Whenever, you know, we always want to do that. We want to be smart about it and not, and use common sense. Mm-hmm. You know, what is important and what sends an important message, how critical it is to do everything within our power to fight pollution, whether it's water pollution or air pollution, because it's the health, it's the safety of people. What's happened in Flint, Michigan is outrageous. It is outrageous. And when you hear that people were trying to bring it to the attention of authorities.
It was covered up. Yeah, they knew about it for months and covered it up.
What do you say to a parent whose child now has high lead levels, which we know impact their ability to grow up and be productive citizens? So all that is important. And I think we just have to be smart about it. And when you see people cutting back because of dollars, yes, we need to use the taxpayers' dollars wisely, but some things are not smart.
Yeah. And now it's the federal government.
And we
that's
need
coming
to have
to bail
the
out.
Oversight. Yeah. We need to have the people to come in. We need to have people who have a history of this, who are looking at these issues and know they have examples of where these kinds of things did not benefit the public in the past, and we have to listen to them as well. But mostly we have to listen to the people in those communities, and it breaks my heart, as I know it does all of you out there, all the listeners.
Yeah.
Just imagine that happening here.
And we should add that among San Diego's congressional delegation, Republicans Duncan Hunter and Daryl Issa voted for that bill to weaken the Clean Water Act, while Democrats Juan Vargas and Scott Peters joined with Susan Davis in opposing it. On a related note, we have this massive methane natural gas leak going on right now in Los Angeles that since October has been spewing out as much methane each day as between 4.5 and 9 million cars would put out. They've had to evacuate several thousand families, and that may become even more with no end in sight. It's not going to be capped until at least February. What do you believe we need to do to address the problem of the aging gas and oil infrastructure in this nation, as well as maybe taking a look at the safety issues? I understand they didn't even have a shutoff valve on that.
Right. And I think that's another example where the public is being hurt because oversight wasn't working or we didn't have enough in place. I suspect you could go back and you could see that the laws were in place may have been honored in some case, but the laws weren't good enough for the situation. And I think when it comes to infrastructure, we know today we have great costs in our infrastructure that are being ignored. Why are they being ignored, whether it's transportation or bridges? Because we haven't decided that this is important enough. Mm-hmm. We have been pushing hard to have a budget that really reflects the needs of this country in infrastructure. There are ways to do that. And unfortunately, we've not been able to get the consensus. And when if we go back to some of what we said earlier about working together, surely all of us can see that every community needs more incentives to get this right. And I think this is a terrible example of what's happening in Los Angeles, an area now where we have to get this fixed. And we have to know, you know, what went wrong, why, and make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, very, very well said.
Actually, what can the public expect to happen this year in Congress?
Well, I think there are a number of areas that we expect to be working on. Some judicial reform is one. I would love to see us tackle immigration, but I don't think that's going to happen. It is a good sign that we passed a bipartisan budget recently that does a lot for the San Diego community. We talked about education earlier, helping impact aid and military families and children, as well as a host of other areas, including some transportation. But, you know, we need to really take a look at what we can accomplish, and we need to be focused on what are our values and what do we think we can work on to be sure that they're funded in the next number of years, in addition to the budget that just passed. And we need to come together, I think, to solve some of the very complex issues we have. And I'm looking forward to that.
Great. When you say judicial reform, are you referring to criminal justice reforms specifically?
Yes, because I think that there seems to be a bipartisan approach to how we look at this and see whether there are changes that can be made in our systems so that more people are able to be rehabilitated, return to their communities, and be productive citizens.
Okay.
And is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know?
I just hope that they keep listening and providing feedback. And we seek that certainly all the time. We have a wonderful team in my office that works very hard on any number of cases that have to come forward. But we also want people to come in and chat with us. We have a very wide open door, and we hope that people will do that.
Very good. Well, as always, Congresswoman, it has been a pleasure. We have been speaking, listeners, to Congresswoman Susan Davis. I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.